Coming up in This Week in Computer Hardware, finally, Magic Leap ships an AR headset. We got new Threadrippers unboxed. And really, does it make sense that NVIDIA would drop new GTXs now? All that and more coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 478, recorded on August 9th, 2018. Magic Leap of Faith. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Protect your online activity today for 3 months free with a one-year package. Go to expressvpn.com/twitch. Welcome to Twits This Week in Computer Hardware, Twits Weekly Show that aims to bring you the most useful, most engaging, most delightful, most affordable, most peculiar, and today, ladies and gentlemen, the most deep out of Texas. Kyle from Hard OCP is joining us. Ryan is missing in action, but up to his eyeballs and chips, I understand. Kyle, man, welcome to This Week in Computer Hardware, man. Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here, brother. Been a while.
Oh my goodness, too long. You are actually up to your neck in Threadripper testing. You did an unboxing. Any thoughts? Is you know, Threadripper 2.0, 1.5? I mean, is it how big of a jump is it from the original round of Threadripper processors from AMD?
So those are Threadripper systems sitting right behind me running right now. And so I've been banging on it really hard in the last week, and this is still under embargo, so I kind of have to be careful what I say here. So obviously you see the 2990WX name and the 2950X name, and that's the difference. The WX is the four core part, whereas the X is the new two core part, which is more, you know, kind of tied to the 1950X. And while AMD hadn't come out and said this, you can truly look at the W in that, in the model number, as meaning workstation. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to see what I can say here. I was really excited about probably building my own Threadripper system, a 32 core part for my next workstation here, because I do a lot of video encoding and that sort of thing. But I also do a lot of gaming on this workstation as well as many other things. And I think that I'm not sure I'm going to go that route.
Really?
There's some situations where it's not as good as you would want it on desktop applications. Right, just plain desktop mm-hmm. applications and gaming, where it's held back a little bit because of the way the memory architecture is set up on that. Also, quite frankly, it's $1,800 part, and it's fairly cost prohibitive for any of us that just want to use it as a desktop part.
So
going back to that, it's really meant as a workstation part, and when it's used as a workstation part, the thing is freaking incredible. So, I mean, seeing what it does on the desktop is pretty crazy with the right applications. So I think, you know, you saw it named 2990X was leaks in the mm-hmm. press forever and ever and ever. And I think right. You saw some people that actually confirmed, hey, there is going to be a 2990X. And the reasoning behind that is I know there were a lot of samples out that were actually had 2990X on them. Okay. And I think that AMD's made a very smart marketing move by changing up and put the W there in the part number, because, and while they never said this, AMD never said this, so I'm not under embargo about this, that W is for workstation. And
got it.
And I think once you see what people have been able to do with that part as a workstation part, you know, really, really beyond that high-end desktop part, right? It's almost not a high-end desktop part. It's almost a true workstation part.
Some point, I mean, dealing with video, I'm like, going to an 1800X last year was amazing because I was reducing render times by like 50% from the Core i7 processor I was using, and it was phenomenal. But at some point, like, I'll take every core you can throw at me. I'll tell people all day long to go with an AMD Ryzen 2 over a Core i5. If you're doing anything, it's multi-core because you get so many more cores. At some point, you know, at $1,800 for, you know, all those cores, there's like this law of diminishing returns. And I know people who do really gnarly CAD/CAM stuff and like, you know, geomining operations where they're doing all sorts of, you know, incredible calculations. You know, it's a tough... You want to spend your money on the part, go for it. But it's like $10,000 speaker cables. Most people aren't going to like remotely take advantage of what it can do. Although $10,000 speaker cables are a boondoggle. Well, yeah. At least you're getting the performance out of a 32-core part. But can you even? I mean, it's
what I'm finding is on the desktop apps is you're going to have trouble finding almost anything that scales into them properly, right? I mean, right. you start looking at your normal consumer. I use Premiere Pro on the desktop to render out 4K video here. And when you start looking at how that gets handled in a part as wide as Threadripper, you're not going to see the scaling that you would on, say, a true workstation application. So you are getting the law of diminishing returns on, say, on a true high-end desktop that's not particularly a workstation where you're running 3ds Max or Maya or something else where you're going to be hitting the CPU a lot. So, but I think what AMD has been able to do here is that they are about to carve out a truly significant part of, and I hate to say low-end workstation, because when you start looking at what Intel CPUs cost at that scale, you're talking $10,000 CPUs on true workstations. I think AMD is going to be able to go in there and take a significant portion of that marketplace fairly easily. And and obviously this is still, they've already said that, hey, all these processors will work on the X399 motherboards that we're already familiar with a BIOS update. So the fact of the matter is you already have motherboards that have been out there for a year that are truly stable, right? That are truly stable and have and that you're going to be able to take this processor and put it on. And it's on their spec page. You're looking at 250-watt TDP on that 2990WX, and I can run it full load, and I can tell you that the 250-watt TDP on it is exactly right on CPU socket power. So I don't think there should not be any X399 motherboards we've seen produced in the last year that should not be able to handle it at stock running Precision Boost 2 under full loads. So where I think, you know, we're going to get more excited is going to be back in the 2950X, because all the goodness that we've seen come out of a second gen Threadripper for socket AM4 is right there on the new Threadripper. It's pretty cool. And you'll also notice that part number does not carry the W moniker and the model number.
Everything shifts just a little bit. I mean, it's amazing to realize how much power you can throw at problems right now. And you know, this is something we've been talking about on the show for a while, which is, you know, I think Intel got really complacent. You know, there's nowhere else for you to go. So this is a performance part. And it's kind of been, I don't know, delightful, awesome, freaking awesome. It's a family show. I can't say the word I'd normally use in that sentence. But it's been amazing to watch the AMD parts come out and just throw, you know, so much processing power for, you know, such a small amount of money by comparison. But it's been pretty crazy. The other thing is we've been talking about, probably new NVIDIA GPUs August 20th. That's the number that's been floating around online. You guys did an amazing article or pair of articles, actually, literally looking at generational performance, you know, for the AMD parts, the NVIDIA parts, looking at, did you guys start with, was it 2013?
Yeah, we went back to 2013 on that, and Brent Justice, he turned all the screws on that. I did not do any work on that except to go back and edit Brent and go back and check him on his numbers. So he's the one who truly put in all the work on that. But yeah, so we went back to basically Crysis 3 and did 780, 980, 1080. And then 780 Ti, 980 Ti, and 1080 Ti, and just looked at how things were still handled. And on, you know, even I know 4K monitors are getting to be all the rage. I've had a 4K display here that I've used for a couple of years now.
Sure.
And gaming on it's still a challenge. And I think we've said this for a long time now, the 1080 Ti is actually the first, absolutely the well, I'd say it's absolutely outside the Titan series. The Ti is the only true 4K card on the market where you can actually game in 4K. And even if you go back and look at like Crysis 3, okay, and I've got the graph up on the screen here. That game came out in 2013, and let's see, and still with all that's with everything turned on, right? At 4K, it's still running at less than 60 frames a second. So
it's a brutal load.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's
you got that's 1440 up on screen there, so that's even still only 70 seconds. And look at how the 780 and the 980 did, and so it's interesting. And quite frankly, there hadn't been a lot of stories to tell in the land of GPUs for the last 8 months or so, just because it's stagnant, right? It is stagnant.
Yeah, AMD's not it, even if. Even if there was a story to tell, it's like, oh, yeah, the AMD, the 56, it's great. They sold out in 2 weeks, and then we saw some more 4.5 months later.
Between the crypto mining smashing the market and no new products really rolling out. So, I mean, the GPP story was fun to tell, but nothing worth buying.
My friends were like, where can you buy a cheap car? I'm like, you can't. Well, how do I get it? You can't. What do I spend the money? But no. There aren't any, and it was crazy. And now that we're finally getting to the point where, you know, the cards settle back down at least towards MSRP, you know, within a biscuit of MSRP, maybe even a biscuit under MSRP for the first time in forever. And now it's like, oh, you know, like 1180 or 2080. I assume we'll call it the 1180 and the 1170. Like, you know, the Polish website has what they claim are 1170 numbers. The Inquirer had some pictures of an 1180 PCB. You know, the number, the date coming out of NVIDIA, I guess August 20th. And I looked at the rumors or the benchmarks that are supposed to be the 1170. It was crazy because it was like way outperforming, I want to say, a 1080 or a 1080 Ti. And I was like, wow, that would be a huge jump. If they leave, you know, assuming they're not sort of shifting the numbers to a different price point.
If we look at it from a business standpoint, right? So you had crypto mining that has totally smashed the inventories. And let's say for argument's sake that Vega 64 and 1080 are fairly pretty much on parity when it comes to desktop gaming at 1440, right? There you can sit there and look back and forth, and you can show you benchmarks that trade back and forth and whatever, but both of them are still good for gaming. Well, you still can't buy a freaking AMD card. And then
I saw one for sale.
Yes. But if you've seen the rumors about NVIDIA having inventory gluts, I would suggest those are true from everybody that I've spoken to about this. So I think when we start looking at this, is NVIDIA going to roll out the 1180 or the 2080 or whatever it's called? And I'm still talking to add-in board manufacturers that are still not solid on the name of the card. So I don't know if NVIDIA is going to roll out a new card or not. And if you think, hey, they've got a huge amount of current gen inventory on hand, and they're still selling all these at MSRP, and they're still the high-end leader. You're still not outrunning the 1080 Ti card. Why should they start selling the next gen card? You know, so I mean, competition's always a factor, but now you got competition, you've got inventory, you've got pricing, you got so many different pressures, and
out all their GPUs to their partners, and now they're just ready to tape up something new, and they want to get their partners on the new on the new processors.
Well, like I said, QuakeCon's going on this week, so we got a lot of partners in town. There's a lot of PC people running around Dallas here to talk to, and a lot of them are still not sure what's going on. And so that really makes me wonder at game cons if they're going to launch a new GPU or what exactly is going to happen. So I don't know. And obviously, since all the GPP stuff, nobody at NVIDIA speaks to me. So I don't have any direct information from NVIDIA whatsoever.
It's okay. I know the feeling. I just, you know, It's
I knew that going in, right?
You know, it's always so exciting. Always so exciting to see how a vendor reacts. But the it's interesting to watch. No, I didn't realize there was that much of a glut on inventory, which makes me wonder why they aren't trying to push prices down below MSRP at this point. But maybe they're just used to prices being so high for so long. Man.
You know.
So go ahead.
Well, no, I mean, NVIDIA does have an arrogance about it, right? And they always have. And they probably always will. And I think that if we started seeing MSRP being pushed down on those cards, that it'd almost be shown as a sign of weakness in the industry. And I think that they think that that might have an effect on their stock price, right? So I don't think they want to show any weakness in the market whatsoever. So I don't expect that MSRP to honestly ever change until possibly we see AMD start rolling out a 7-nanometer cards.
Right. It'll be interesting to watch. And gaming will be even more affordable. Now we just need to get memory. Samsung needs to get that fab online so memory prices start coming back down again. Oh, my goodness. Let's take a moment to thank our sponsor this week in computer hardware. Is brought to you by ExpressVPN. I am here at DEF CON using a computer and using ExpressVPN because I want to keep my information safe online. It doesn't matter. Normal human beings don't operate a computer at DEF CON, but I'm not exactly normal. But when I am behaving like a normal human being, hotels, coffee shops, questionable clients who may or may not have a secure network, I pretty much, it doesn't matter whether I trust the network or not, I almost always use a VPN because I want to keep my information secure. I don't want my online activity browser. I don't really particularly want my ISP to know what I'm doing. I don't want them watching my packets go by. And by using a VPN, I keep my data private. I keep my data secure. I keep my web transactions, my connection to my bank, I keep it from being tapped into by people I don't want touching my data, my financial information, I don't want people cracking my stuff. ExpressVPN, it's nice. They got easy-to-use apps that run seamlessly in the background of your computer, your phone, your tablet. You can turn it on with a single click. Super convenient. Secures and anonymizes your internet browsing. They encrypt your data. They hide your public IP address. And they keep things hidden, which to me is nice. You don't need to be reading over my shoulder, ISP. Allows you to safely surf on public Wi-Fi without being snooped on or having your personal data stolen. You know, if you're using the Wi-Fi at a coffee shop, you're sharing your information with anybody else on that network. And it can get kind of nasty, depending on how, you know, depending on how well the person running the coffee shop or the company supplying the service in the coffee shop is doing, things can be pretty insecure. And I could probably ask a few people around here how it happens. It's the number one rated VPN service by TechRadar. It comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so you can try it, and it costs less than $7 a month. A little security, well, a lot of security for a little bit of money. It's a pretty good deal. Protect your online activity today and find out how you can get 3 months free with a 1-year package at expressvpn.com/twitch. That's expressvpn.com/twitch for 3 months free with a 1-year package. Visit expressvpn.com/twitch to learn more. If you're not running a VPN when you travel, you really should be. And if you don't want your ISP to know what you're doing, run a VPN and cut them out of the loop. It's nice to just be able to do what you want to do without being snooped on. And do us a favor, check out our sponsor, expressvpn.com/twitch to learn more. Thank you, ExpressVPN. You're into VR. You're a fan. Do you use, you know, Oculus Rift, HTC Vive, both? And, of course, this is leading into the strange and wondrous thing that came out of Magic this week.
I just sold my Oculus. I had two here. I sent one to a buddy of mine in California, and I sold one that was new in box. I've been a real fan of the Vive. I've had a better experience with it. When really you kind of look at the Oculus, the Rift, the way it was designed was really to be used it wasn't really a full room. And now they've changed that, and there's a lot of people that use it that way. So don't get me wrong. Another reason that we relied on Vive was because of, you've probably, you know, we hadn't done this in about a year where we dug in and did actual video card reviews and actually used, you know, VR games. And the data that we were able to get logging wise out of the Vive so far just blew Oculus out of the water, that it was just an easier platform for us to use from a review standpoint. And from a review standpoint, it really didn't matter because you're still going 90 frames and 90 frames here. It doesn't matter. You're still looking for 11.1 millisecond per frame, and that's going to be your target. And it doesn't matter if that's Vive or that's Oculus. But reaching out to Oculus, we could not even get them to answer questions. So
really?
No, not at all. And so, but we went back and started, we were dealing with the guys over at Valve. And I mean, there were times when I literally reached out to people at Valve and said, I would really like to have this point of data that I can log. And I'd get an email back and go, hey, you know what? We've got a beta release coming out for Steam VR. I'll go ahead and throw that in there. So you'll have it in a couple hours. where Oculus wouldn't ask questions or wouldn't answer questions, right. and the guys over at Valve were more than forthcoming and wanting to help us and expose the platform and you know, right. just make it easier for us to use. So that's I'm biased on that.
That's a reasonable bias, though.
Well, not everybody's reviewing that stuff. A lot of people just want to play it. So from a controller standpoint, and that I can see where people have their differences. I've got two Vive Pros here, and those things are pretty incredible. I would they're definitely above the Rift, right? So you know, being the GPU market's been so stagnant, so what we were telling people, and this still goes today, if you're going to get into the VR end of it, I suggest having no less than a 1070. Okay,
right.
If you're going to do that, I suggest you go NVIDIA GPU and no less than 1070, and the more the better. That just is what it is, and you know, yeah, I still like Vive.
Nothing wrong with that. It's it's crazy, right? Because we've all been kind of staring blankly at Magic Leap for several years now. Ooh, there's a rendering. Ooh. There's a rendering of another thing. They finally, you know, announced the developer's edition. It's out. It's there's a sentence in my head here, yearning to breathe free, which is basically that $22.95, the developer's edition, right, which is a little bit less expensive, I want to say, than what Microsoft's augmented reality headset came out for. The super space dude kind of glasses look that you either are going to love or hate. So $2 billion in funding gets you that. And it's an augmented reality situation. You're looking through the goggles. It's they start talking about the, quote, technology used in this, which involves magic pixie dust and super special light action. But basically, it's very similar. I haven't had one on, mind you, but it sounds, based on what people are saying who have had it on their heads, a lot like the stuff that Microsoft's been doing. What's crazy about this is, it's less than the Microsoft HoloLens. It's $2,300
for dev kids too, right?
Yeah. And I agree. And you know, it's certainly the early days of the Oculus was expensive, but it's only going to be sold in 6 cities, and it's only going to be sold in a white glove kind of service. The service is called Liftoff. They're doing it with a startup called e-commerce, and they basically are going to come to your house and make sure it fits you properly. Or make sure you have the right size device. Chicago, Los Angeles, Miami's, New York, San Francisco, and Seattle. They're going to add more mini cities this fall.
Yeah, I checked my zip code yesterday. I can have one shipped here. So the Dallas is on the list as well. But what's really concerning about that, if that, and come on, I'm a big VR fan. I'm a big AR fan. I am not a Magic Leap fan. I don't have any problem telling you that at all. I think, they have lied to people repeatedly. Their demos have been less than impressive, and that's probably the nicest word I can use. And so when you look at this white glove service to come fit this stuff to your head, that tells me one thing, right? That tells me that the way their lens set up works on their headset is very, very finicky, right? Yeah. So if they got $2 billion and they still have not figured out how to make this work without coming out and have somebody fit it to your head. I think there's some big issues with the technology there. And you're showing on screen right now, you're showing the expandable, right? You see the headset and the way they expand.
And there's the dose pieces.
So what exactly is a white glove coming out? What's he going to do? Adjust the headband for you? I don't understand that. So that tells me that there's some alignment issues and the way that it fits to your face and how it has to be exactly right for it to work correctly. And I would suggest that is tremendously concerning. And
I'm with you on that one. The other thing, it's funny because they kind of did the same thing that Microsoft did, because Microsoft did these amazing demos when they launched their augmented reality headset. But the demos were sort of 180-degree field of view. And then when you got your demo, you know, you're looking through a soap bar. And I gotta say, you know, given the amount of money and the amount of time they have in this, I was like, HoloLens, okay, it's going to be augmented reality. It's the same kind of...
It's looking through a tube,
Yeah, and I just... You know, I don't feel... You know, the words revolutionary and life-changing don't come to mind.
No, not at all. Not at all. I'm looking through two little flicker screens that are the size of a postage stamp in front of my eyes. I think, you know, the whole game thing from the side of AR, I think is tremendously gimmicky. I don't see it. I mean, the first time you see it, you go, wow, that is really... really cool. And then
the
about
army
10
men
minutes
are climbing over my coffee table.
Yeah, exactly. But 10 but 10 minutes later you go, okay, well that was neat. What else you got? And there's just not a whole lot of what else you got there. You know, when you look at VR transporting you to an entirely new world, right?
Right.
That will totally totally immerse you in something else and make you forget where you are. You're still just, do I want to put out $2,000 for this and still sitting there looking at my living room?
As you mentioned earlier, it is a developer's version. A developer's version is always, they're early and they're more expensive. Yeah. You know, I love the fact that, you know, finally there's something to do with a Tegra X2. sorry, that may have sounded ruder than I meant it to.
But that was the truth, right?
Yeah, you know, so you've got the lightwear headset, the light pack computer that straps to your thigh, a handheld controller, and not what I would call particularly awesome battery life. I want to say I heard a number like 3 hours, 4 hours out of it. I like that they're using the cameras to locate you. It's 7 years, so much hype. It seems like this is one of those products that should have shipped like 4 years ago, and a lot of venture capital people that hadn't bothered to pay attention to anything else in VR or augmented reality saw demos and just cut checks.
As much bad things as I could sit here and tell you about that, when you look at that equipment and you look at the technology behind it, it is not inexpensive, right?
No.
That is not a cheap piece of hardware. I think for this augmented reality thing to really happen at a consumer level, you're still looking at a $300 device, quite frankly. And I just don't think that's where this is going to end up. You know, I mean, the next big wave in this, and you were talking about battery packs and this kind of thing. The next big wave, what's really going to push VR forward is getting rid of the cables. And if you've had a cableless VR experience, it is so tremendously different and bigger and better.
Yeah.
It's simply amazing. So, that's the next big thing that's going to happen, I think. We have had prototypes here. Also, there's a company called TPcast that does wireless VR. When it works, it works really good and it's awesome.
Right.
When it doesn't work, it sucks and it's kind of iffy on when it works and when it doesn't work. Right. We've also had in some wireless VR headsets here. I'm under NDA on this, so I can't mention, I can tell you this, that we've had wireless streaming headsets that have allowed me to roam around my house and tour a museum. I mean, so there's some incredible technology coming, but I think that, you know, a lot of people don't realize, and this kind of goes towards Magic Leap you know, all the other, I call them fake VR, right? Where you put the phone on the machine or even the freestanding headsets is you don't have any freedom of movement in there. Right. And you don't have, especially like when you're playing shooter games or something in VR and you tilt your head with Rift or Vive, you know, you tilt your head, and you get movement. You have all these different axes of movement that you can use inside VR that don't translate over to. And I guess I need to stop moving around because the camera's out of focus. But but you have so many. You have these axes of movement. And you can drop down on the floor. And have you ever played Pavlov in VR, which is basically a Counter-Strike ripoff?
Yeah, a little bit, not a lot, but it's just enough to get in trouble.
It is absolutely incredible. And once you can have that experience wirelessly, then the game's a total different thing. But I don't see Magic Leap. I never see it actually being successful in the market. And I think there's some real big issues at that company about that they really understand the marketplace and what they're selling into and who they're going up against, even with all the money they have. And I think, and I'm not saying they're bad guys, don't get me wrong, but I honestly believe they do not understand the market that they're going to have to push that into.
It's going to be tough because, like, I get the idea of augmented reality, and I certainly, the Microsoft had a demo that having, you know, a family member that used to work in an architectural firm, and the augmented reality is a pretty fantastic tool. You know, if you're walking a client through modifications to a building, not a huge, you know what I mean? But in other areas, like
the business side of AR, I think could be huge. I think I think it would totally blow the consumer/gaming end of it just totally out of the water. I could probably guarantee you that's exactly what Microsoft is focusing on. And they're going to do a good job at. And I think Magic Leap's not going to be left with a pot to piss in when they get finished with them.
Well, certainly Microsoft's got deeper pockets. Also, like, I don't know how Magic Leap pays off their money, but I mean, it's funny. I was thinking when, you know, earlier this year when the Lenovo's Mirage Solo came out and the Oculus Go came out, all I can remember thinking was like, I want the 6 degrees of freedom from the Mirage Solo, the Lenovo Mirage Solo. I want the speakers, the surround sound from the Oculus Go, and I need all of the games from both of them because there's not enough games on either platform to kind of really be satisfying. I don't know. It's fun to watch it. You know, when you find the right game that clicks with you, it's incredible. Certainly something's going to keep growing and changing over time. But so HTC Vive for you, 1070 is a minimum card, and Magic Leap, man, I'll be curious what their actual first consumer product sells for. That's going to be a very large number, I suspect.
I'm going to say this right now. I'll go out on a limb. I'm going to suggest they never have a consumer product.
Cruel, but entirely possible.
It is what it is, right?
Yeah, not biting you on this one. Pixel 3, The Verge has leaks of Google Pixel 3. And the comment that stuck with me was somebody was on Twitter, and I apologize, I don't have their name. I laugh because, you know, notches are bad, but look, we can make the biggest notch in a phone you've ever seen in your life. I think that's kind of where you sum it up. You know, months away from Pixel 3, Pixel 3 XL announcements. I like the article that Chaim Gartenberg wrote up at The Verge. Let me quote him here. The latest images of Google's next flagship appear to show finalized production hardware and what seems to be a pair of wired USB-C Pixel Buds. So, came from a Russian blogger, Android Police. I cannot pronounce the name in Russian. But, man, that is a big notch on that phone. That's all I'm going to say about that. I haven't shown this picture to Shannon yet, but I don't expect her reaction because she's gone from the Pixel XL to the Pixel 2 XL, and I don't think she's going to be really excited about that notch if that's a legit look at the Pixel 3 XL. And if it's not, it's some really nice Photoshop work, so something to keep an eye out for.
Well, let me ask you this, and I'm not a phone geek kind of the way a lot of people are. I do have a Pixel 2 XL. I bought it specifically for the camera. It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. I own the Pixel 1 as well. And I say I'm not a phone geek, but I don't see any reason Why would I want a Pixel 3 over the Pixel 2? Can you
wait
tell me that?
You see the camera. Well, you know, I mean, you probably didn't think you were going to want a Pixel 2 until you saw the camera. Or what was it that got you to go from the Pixel to the Pixel 2?
It was a camera. Yeah, it was 100% the camera. I mean,
all they got to do is put a better, like maybe they upgrade the sensor in the camera, do a little bit of tweaking on the back end, and suddenly it has even better low light performance. Or maybe they finally get one of those crazy lenses, because there's been some amazing engineering. I don't think anybody's shipped in a product yet, but sort of fluid lenses that allow a lens tiny enough to fit into a cell phone to actually sort of manipulate a sort of liquidy glass. I was not thinking of this in reviewing the terminology, but essentially using what amounts to a liquid lens that they can manipulate and turn the lens on something the size of a cell phone camera from sort of a short range photographic lens into a telephoto lens. Or maybe they actually come up with a legit telephoto lens camera. Who knows? I mean, every time I think I'm not going to be impressed with the next generation of cameras on phones, I am impressed. I just, you know, refuse to. I'm still running an iPhone 6 and probably going to a Motorola Moto G6 because I just can't justify a $1,000 phone right now, no matter how good the camera is. But it's also amazing. Like, it's awesome. I mean, when you look at, the OnePlus 6. You know, or even like I was laughing because a friend of mine, Bill Shannon, actually on Tech Thing reviewed the Moto G6. He's like, the camera's meh. I'm like, you know, yeah, but it's a really good camera for $250. Because I remember buying a G4 a couple years ago, and I realized I could leave. You know, so there's apps I miss, but I'm like, I can leave iOS and go Android, except for the camera on that phone was so atrocious. And at this point, you had a pretty good camera on the right $250 phone, and it's kind of impressive to see how far that's come in the last couple of years. So,
I got the Pixel 2 for the every review picture I take is taken with the Pixel 2. And I mean, it's amazing how good of pictures it makes you actually look like I'm a photographer, and that's tough to do.
Something to be said for really, really good engineering and cameras. One last thing before we get an interesting article came out earlier on Hard OCP. Quote, China lacks the decades of sustained investment to compete as a tech innovator. And this is interesting. Because China, of course, has their Made in China 2025 initiative where they want to sort of take the lead in a whole bunch of industries. We got the trade war starting to get the beginnings of ugly, certainly in the United States for some manufacturers. And this Professor Zhang Jun, quote, debunks the myth that China is ready to become ground zero for innovation in technology. And he's basically saying that, you know, we're not going to spin this up in 7 years. He does not say. I will say industrial espionage is not a substitute for core research or serious research at universities. And he's basically saying it's going to take decades to deliver the kind of innovations in technology that China seems to be mandating happen by 2025. I mean, how are you feeling about all this?
You know, I've said for years that, you know, traveling, if you're traveling west, once you cross the international date line, that there is no more intellectual property law. It's just that's where it ends, right? And so I think what China's having to deal with is whereas, say here in the States, we've always had a culture of innovation, right? And I mean, that's the way it is. And we're always looking and going forward to make the next big thing and figure this out and be it whether it comes from and what nationality this person is or not. But it is still a culture that we incubate, you know, here in the West. Right. I mean, that's what we do. And I don't think that same culture is necessarily part of what goes on as China is being baked in across the entire segment of the country, right? So I think it's always easy to take somebody else's. I mean, they've done great things in manufacturing and taking other people's ideas and running with those, but they've never generally made it a lot better, right? Is that, you know what I'm saying? I don't think they have any. There's no problems with understanding the technology there, but I think it just comes back to a cultural difference in the way the society's been raised there. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to take them a lot longer. And I think they would really have to harvest at an educational level for a couple generations to start fueling, you know, that spirit of innovation. Mm-hmm. And not saying that there's none there. So I know somebody's going to rip me up on even suggesting this, but I'm just saying on a widespread basis, I just think culturally, it's a little bit different there. And there's some bigger hurdles there to climb than just getting money for a startup.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens, because there's cases where, you know, you look at the businesses and huge, massive businesses have been grown. And it almost feels like the businesses are leading the engineers rather than the engineers leading the businesses. But I think it's going to be interesting to watch, which may be a cop out now that I hear that word out, that phrase outside of my head rather than inside of it. But it always amazes me to watch, you know, we tend to think of like there's new technology coming out of the United States. There's new phone technology, obviously, with Samsung coming out of Korea. There's still interesting stuff coming out of Japan. I always wonder what happens when India and China really spin up. I mean, given the amount of extraordinary education that's taking place in those nations and just the sheer volume of people, I just think at some point, you know, these kind of entrepreneurial engineers or these incredibly creative people are going to finally start driving things. And
well, look at the difference between, say, Taiwan and China. Right.
Absolutely.
And you look at back and you look at the innovation that came out of Taiwan starting in the early 90s and late 80s. And it was tremendously different from what was going on in mainland China. And you have two very different cultures there. And I would suggest to you that the Taiwanese have been more, you know, open to innovation and going out and finding something to make something better and harvesting that in their educational system than what's happened in mainland China. But what do I know?
At this point, a lot. Maybe not, you know. We'll find out. I'm still really curious to see whether or not we get new GPUs between now and Christmas. Because I'm kind of in the need to buy a new GPU because I'm building another AMD system in this super small mini ITX case. And so I need a sub 215 millimeter GPU, and I want to get like a 1070. And I really don't want to buy that and then like 3 weeks later be like, no.
well, Amazon. I do know this. And while I'm not sure that something's going to happen at GamesCon, you know, since the GPP thing, we've seen a lot of control being leveraged out of NVIDIA about how their products are handled. And one thing I do know, and I've never, you know, I saw this blanket NDA that they had people sign, which I've never seen that before in the industry of doing this 20 years, which I thought was odd. Another thing that happened this week and talking to a bunch of folks that are here for QuakeCon again, that NVIDIA was asking for the names, addresses, phone numbers, and emails of anybody that would be reviewing their video cards. I have never seen that happen. So NVIDIA is definitely changing the way they're dealing with things. So, but that tells me that also they're looking that a card is coming soon. You know, the last launch that we saw, now that you have the Founders Edition cards, right? So on launch day, none of the AIBs had a card to sell. It was all, you know, so I think we would, considering the amount of control that NVIDIA wants to exert over this, I would suggest we're going to see the same scenario again. And if we do see new cards roll out at GamesCon, then it would probably be 30 to possibly 60 days after that we start seeing solid AIB cards coming behind that. So it's not going to all happen. It's not going to all happen fast. It's going to be a segmented, slow rollout. So, but they were asking, NVIDIA was asking for who your reviewers are. So something's cooking there.
Interesting. Maybe they're just going to start calling people up in the night. So I just watched like V for Vendetta the other night on Amazon Prime, and I'm just like ah, they're going to black bag all the reviewers. Disappear them. I shouldn't joke about things like that. Oh my goodness. Kyle, it has been a pleasure having you on the show. Should we tell people where to find you?
Oh, yeah. ArtOCP.com, you know, same place we've been for a long time. Hey, well, how long ago was it that you and I did our first live show on Tech TV? How long ago was that? I mean, I remember you and I. Dude, I remember you and I doing a live discussion about the 9700 that time. And remember, we had 5800 on stage, and you brought out the scale out of the mail room.
That sounds like something I would do.
And you put that 5800 had that huge chunk of copper on it, and you're like, yeah, you know, if you're buying by the pound, you're getting your money's worth. Of course, it all went crazy from there. But yeah,
doing the live. Yeah, no, that would be. So I just hit 20 years in California in March, which is kind of mind blowing. So that would have been about 18 years ago.
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't even think you had a beard at that point. Certainly I didn't. So, oh my goodness. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know Kyle, you should. HardOCP.com is the website. They do some amazing reviews there. You should go check them out. And thanks again, Kyle, for joining us on This Week in Computer Hardware. Oh, thank you so much. If this is your first episode of This Week in Computer Hardware, do me a favor. Go over to twit.tv/TWICH. You get the links to all of our RSS feeds, basically anyhow you want to watch or listen to it, podcast or video, we can set you up. You get links to all the older shows. And seriously, we want to thank you for joining us on this episode, and we want to encourage you to listen to all of the episodes in the future, so please subscribe. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us on This Week in Computer Hardware. I'm Patrick Norton, and I'll see you next week.